traditional ecological knowledge represents the collective knowledge of all the people from a tribal area. That knowledge, the collective knowledge, has come through generations over time, and it's recorded in stories, it's recorded in the landscape as you look at it, and you learn to read the landscape and understand the landscape through that knowledge of place. And it's so in that sense, then it's place-based knowledge that's specific to a specific region.
Traditional ecological knowledge is the foreigner's term. We just call it elder knowledge, or just the stuff we know. It's tradition. Actually, it would probably be the closest term.
TEK is traditional ecological knowledge. And in my own words, what it has come to, in my experience here in Chico, is that what I'm doing is actually looking at the skill set of our indigenous ancestors and still of today as a technology that is vital for understanding the sustainability of our land and its resources. Well, I think that TEK becomes, for me, it's almost like a mutual partnership between the native and the non-native. It's like a mutual understanding. It's a ground that we can both walk up to and have respect for each other. The advocacy of TEK was to counteract suicide that was going on in Indian country. And not only in Indian country, but, you know, as a personal testimony, my own sense of depression and sense of loss and sense of displacement and wanting not to be here anymore in different times in my life, and thinking of different solutions rather than suicide to get to feeling fulfilled. There's a way of perceiving the environment that changes the way you perceive yourself. And I encourage everyone to look at the environment in different and complex ways. Taking a bus downtown and looking out the window at the sidewalks and the streets, I know that at one time there was a creek, there was a tree, there was a place there that was more organic and less man-made, less concrete. And I look at the creek and I look at the organic matter as the realness of the area and the dominance that we have over, you know, with urban sprawl, with our cities. It saddens, it breaks my heart. And the only way I think that we can't tear down what's already exists, but what we have left, what is left, what we see around us, the beautiful ferns, the tall trees, the beautiful coast that we have in Northern California, they need to be taken care of and tended. And we have to listen to the indigenous voices in this area that care. And I can't give up, no matter what. There's got to be a voice from the past that cares, that can see what happened, and then fights.
All right, we're bringing you voices from now that cares. Thank you, Allie Matters Knight. Guillermo Mash here. I'm welcoming you to the March 5th edition of Imagining Community here on KZFR 90.1 FM. The clip you just listened to was from a PBS documentary on traditional ecological knowledge, featuring Indigenous Natives pyrogeographer Don Hankins, Greg Castro, and Allie Matters Knight from TEK, Chico.org. Check them out. Check them out. Our show tonight is a combination of Season 1 on traditional ecological knowledge and our new Season 2 story on community ag. And I'm real pleased to have our first guest, pre-record, Camille Von Canal, a reporter with Report for America, on assignment with the Chico Enterprise Record since June of 2019, covering extremely well, I might add, underreported stories on the Ridge post-camp fire. We also have Pam Larry with Victory Gardens 2.0, Fran Stupenagel with Grub Community Supported Agriculture, and we're going to slip in some musical performances by Jimmy Brobeck, Diane Suzuki, and poetry by Ren Tuatha here on People Powered Radio. All right, Guillermo Mash here reporting for Imagining Community on KZFR 90.1 FM, and I'm very pleased to have Camille Von Canal in the studio. And Camille covers campfire recovery for Report for America, a national nonprofit organization that helps fund local journalists. Camille is happy to be back hiking the hills and mountains of her home state of California. Welcome to KZFR, Camille.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Maybe a little bit of backstory. What do people need to know about Kami as it relates to the work you're doing and when you used to live here in California?
Yeah, sure. So I guess the first thing to clarify, since I'm speaking to a Chico audience, is that I am not related to Jeff Von Kienel, who is the owner and publisher of the Chico News and Review. Go.
There's a scoop.
Yeah, there's clearing up some community confusion there. It's weird because the name is highly unusual, so you'd think we'd be related. But actually, I'm originally from Switzerland, but I grew up in the Bay Area in California. I didn't know much about Chico growing up, but I've fallen in love with it since getting here. What brought me here is this organization, Report for America. They gave the Enterprise Record a grant for a journalist to cover the aftermath of the campfire. And I applied to the job, and we got matched, and here I am.
And how long have you been in the community?
I've been here since June of last year, so it hasn't been that long.
But it is for a beat reporter that's publishing every day. That's hundreds and hundreds of articles. That's amazing.
I definitely, it was kind of, they threw me off the deep end. I started up going to Paradise almost every day, and I've just been as embedded as possible.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit of detail around the different types of stories you've covered.
I've defined my beat as the aftermath of the campfire, so that's pretty broad. I have a personal interest in environmental policy. So I've been particularly attracted to stories about forest management, energy policy, and that's maybe what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah,
but, the bulk, the bread and butter of the beat is just covering the rebuilding. So I've been at homes that are being rebuilt in Paradise and elsewhere. I mean, it's just not Paradise. I've spent a lot of time in Concow, which I think is really interesting. And
it's
also one of those places that's not covered quite as much, doesn't get quite as much attention. And I've been trying to focus on how the recovery is unequal for people. So people with previous vulnerabilities or with lower incomes are at a serious disadvantage in the recovery. And I think that's also where I can maybe shed some light and focus some attention on those people. So I've done stories on mobile home parks and people in the FEMA housing. Yeah, so there's a lot of different threads I'm following.
Describe the nuances and challenges with prescribed burns and fuel reduction on private land versus public land.
Whew, I don't know where to start with this.
Yeah.
I guess it's important to know that prescribed fire or cultural fire, intentional fire, I'd say, is the kind of overall category, has been a thing in California for thousands of years. Indigenous people have been using fire to manage the forests for a long time. And it's just kind of coming back as a policy tool for federal and state land managers. And increasingly now that destructive fires are kind of in the news all the time, especially here, it's seen as a potential, one of the potential solutions to manage the forests. So the Forest Service has been using prescribed fire for a long time. Cal Fire is increasingly kind of interested in this and in vegetation management as a whole. But the vast majority of private landowners don't have access to either the knowledge to do prescribed fire or the tools to do prescribed fire. And it's important to know that the American Forest Foundation has found that around 3 out of 5 acres in watersheds that are at high risk for fire in California are actually held by private landowners. So federal and state land managers can do as much prescribed fire or vegetation management as they want, but it doesn't actually help the communities who are often near land that is held by private landowners, so like small forest owners. So that's the backstory. And private landowners, if they want to introduce prescribed fire, there's a lot of hurdles in addition to the normal hurdles that sort of like a federal land manager would have, which is permitting and finding a good weather window to do an intentional controlled burn. There's insurance issues, because if you set fire to your land and it gets out of control, you're liable for that. That's like a heavy burden for a private landowner to take on. And there's also the cost. It's very expensive. Oftentimes, it's something that people don't really have the knowledge and skills to do themselves, so they can contract it. So we have, you know, several companies locally who can do this on contract, but it's expensive. And if the weather window doesn't work out, then you've just like sunk a lot of money into it.
But for me, I really got connected in 2018. I hadn't spent much time on the ridge, but I spent tons of time in 2018. And you don't have to be a scientist to go, this is a fire waiting to happen.
Right.
You know, right. So a good transition for that would be this whole real concept that we should have been all over a long time ago is the, you know, projects to reduce the fuels. You know, we can burn them or we can actually do some, you know, timber cutting and thinning. Maybe you could shed some light on that, and especially as it relates to this article actually you just did that was pretty recent, Project Seeks to Reduce Fuels on Private Lands.
Yeah, so I guess the historical background to that is, again, that there have been, or indigenous people have used fire to reduce fuels historically in California.
Yeah.
But then that stopped when colonial powers came in, and for a long time there was a policy of suppressing fires. So the fuels were just building up. And then at the same time, in California, we had the timber industry for a long time, but that kind of has been in decline over the past few decades. So there has been not as much biomass being taken out of the forest. So it's true that the forests are a little overgrown. I mean, if you've ever been to Berry Creek, that is a good example of a forest that's completely overgrown. I mean, it's scary for me to be there. Reduction of fuels is becoming like really trendy. And I was at a meeting of the timber industry in Sacramento like a few weeks ago, and the Cal Fire director was there, the director of like sort of the statewide coalition to reduce fuels, to reduce fire risk was there. And she said that for the first time in many decades, she was having environmental groups and the timber industry coming together to her office to propose vegetation management projects to reduce fire risk. So it's really like the time is right for those sorts of projects to take place.
Yeah, and I spent a lot of time, I raised a family in Placer County, and I see a big difference between how the land's managed in one of the richest counties in the state versus Butte County, which is like one of the poorest in the state.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that Butte County is so rich in natural resources, but it's not really being exploited anymore, which, you know, some people might say is good. I'm a journalist, I'm not going to weigh in on that debate. But like, I visited a small family forest landowner in Cohasset, Maple Creek Ranch, where they used to harvest the forest kind of on a small scale, sustainable way. But with the collapse of the timber industry, they haven't been able to do that properly in a long time. And now they're terrified because they're right next to Cohasset, the community. And they're, you know, if a fire comes onto their property, it'll just tear through all the underbrush and the seedlings they haven't been able to harvest. So that's the disparity with fuel reduction, is that, again, with these small family-owned forests, it's not profitable for them anymore to be reducing the fuels. And they're kind of scrambling after grants to even just break even. And so this new program, or this is a program, not brand new, but offers help to those sorts of people to connect them with like a biomass facility that will take their trees and maybe at least help them break even.
Yeah, that's the nexus of the article. This is My Sierra Woods and helps sell off the logs that can be turned to lumber chips for biomass energy. So basically they use that to offset the cost of doing the logging.
Yeah.
But it's a break even. And in our capitalist society, it's hard to get break even things approved. But, you know, knowing that we're sitting next door to the largest natural disaster in the world in 2018, I guess that puts a little more of a focus on things.
Yeah, totally. There's definitely money coming in for that sort of stuff. So,
Imagine Community made possible. Generous contributions, KZVR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, your state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts have been creating economic opportunity by producing and supporting events and publishing a bi-monthly arts and culture newsletter. To stay in the know or have your event listed, visit friendsof.arts. And by Chico Performances, presenting The Second City, Laughing for All the Wrong Reasons, on Saturday, March 28th at Laxon Auditorium. Hailing from Chicago, Second City delivers an opportunity to laugh at ourselves and our current predicaments. Tickets and information at chicoperformances.com. And you're listening to 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio, Sacramento Valley, Foothills, and beyond. And we're in the midst of an interview with Camille Von Cannell, a reporter with Report for America, on assignment with the Chico Enterprise Record, since June of 2019, covering underreported stories on the ridge. Now back to that interview here on People Power Radio.
It wasn't a week after the fire. This is the frustrated citizen. You know, I'm hearing from people, Camille, they're going, they should be building a biomass. They should be figuring out how to use the biomass on the ridge. They should be figuring this out right now because we shouldn't be shipping stuff outside the county when we have all of this rebuild that has to happen up there. And I'm a little concerned or a little bit angst to it, knowing that we're a year and a half in, and by the research I've done, it doesn't seem like we've made any inroads to kind of go, we've got a lot of biomass, let's open a biomass reclamation facility and do something with it, create wood. Or am I missing part of the story? Are they working on
that? There's definitely efforts underway.
There's
a lot of things underway, and I'm like, have several articles planned on that, so I'm not sure I want to scoop myself. There are definitely efforts underway, and I'd say most of them are being kind of spearheaded by the Butte County Fire Safe Council. One of the big concepts right now that they're working on is potentially getting a very small scale biomass plant in, say, the heart of Paradise.
Love that. Yeah.
To convert chips into energy that would heat and cool around 300 homes. Mm-hmm. It's called a heating and cooling district. And these things are, you know, I'm learning this, but these things are pretty popular in Europe and in Canada, but haven't really been introduced in the US. But since all eyes are on Paradise as sort of a model of recovery, there's thinking that this might be an opportunity to do something like that. But there would still be many, many steps for this to become reality. But this is one of the projects that people are hoping would get underway. And then there's also interest in getting the Popeye, which was the biomass plant in Oroville that shut down a few years ago because of violations of like environmental laws. Mm-hmm. So there's interest in getting that back up and running, but that would also require a lot of steps. So I'd say that you're totally right that there's interest. Yeah. There's like a potential opening for this, and there's interest locally in it. There's barriers locally and also at the state level because biomass energy is not quite seen at the same level as wind and solar for renewable energy. Mm-hmm. At the state level, so there's not quite as many subsidies, and then the trick is getting PG&E to buy that energy. So yeah, but I think it's exciting right now. There's like a mix of things needed. Happening.
Yeah.
So stay tuned because I'm writing about these things.
Nice. I'm glad you are. You folks just joining, actually, we are speaking with Camille Von Connell, who is here with Report for America. She's been here since June of last year, doing daily reporting for our local Enterprise Record. And let's just shift here to kind of the story we've been covering, radio story, photojournalism story around traditional ecological knowledge and how it relates to this article. Tribes ask for a greater share of disaster recovery work for locals. And as all good articles, I just love when it ends with a great quote. Johnny Vigil, who I actually interviewed on when they did that walkthrough,
Don
Hinkins.
Good.
Yeah, he was in the part of the radio interview.
He told me that his name is pronounced Vigil.
Vigil?
Yeah.
He didn't tell me his name. Thank you. Thank you. Vigil. Did I get that right?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's a firefighter, wildland firefighter. Johnny's part of the Machupta tribe. But he said, this is our land and we've been here our whole lives and we're staying here, he said. I fought this fire and I want to help maintain now. It means a lot. I mean, there's a lot to unpack in this article. Johnny was up there with part of the Machupta tribe. They were doing some training on, you know, chainsaws. And my understanding that they had actually did a demonstration. They went into one of the government meetings that were going on and kind of disrupted it.
Yeah, so this goes back to phase two of the disaster recovery cleanup efforts. The first was the debris removal, and now we're talking about the tree removal, the removal of hazardous trees. And this is another potentially huge contract that CalRecycle, the state agency kind of implementing this for CalOES, mm-hmm. is working out right now. If you thought debris removal was big and complicated, tree removal is going to be even worse. The debris removal work was employing some tribal members as cultural monitors. So their job was to go around and monitor all the sites for artifacts of cultural and historical importance, which is, you know, that's based on law that they have to do that. So there was dozens of tribal members employed in that. Now with this tree removal phase, that monitoring is not quite as intensive. So those monitors are now out of a job and they want some other sort of job as part of this recovery, because mm-hmm. they're here, they're many of right, them are campfire right. survivors. If mm-hmm. they're not survivors themselves, they're impacted in some sort of way. And so they want to work. You know, a few of the local tribes have joined together in an effort with other allies to bid for part of this huge contract. And what's sort of interesting is that now they want to leverage their status as sovereign nations into kind of more of a say in getting this work, because they are entitled as sovereign nations to government consultation. They do have sort of a special role in government affairs because they're a sovereign. So what Ali Meters Knight is asking for is for more meetings on this to get work for the tribes, but also for other locals. So this is not an effort limited to the tribes. What was happening the other day that I went up and saw was there was a certification, a training for locals in S2112, which is, I think, chainsaw safety, from what I understand.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are native and non-native residents there, kind of getting extra skills to be employable in tree removal work.
And then the demonstration.
So
broke out.
This kind of like came to a head, or the way I learned about it was when they went into a disaster recovery task force meeting. So they're still over at the Chico Airport, I believe, Cal OES and FEMA, right, doing this disaster recovery work, demanding to be consulted as sovereign nations, because they say that they haven't quite gotten the meetings that they wanted. Cal OES, I must say, since I'm a journalist, I have to include the response from Cal OES, which was that they didn't have much to say because the bidding process is still underway, but that they're committed to working with all parties impacted.
Yeah, you know, that actually brought up a question. Can you use the word demand? I actually was going to say, did it play out more as an ask versus a demand? Because usually if you have a demand, you kind of say, if you don't do it, this is going to happen. I mean, do they actually have that level of demand, or is it more of, please work with us?
I mean, the words that Ali used are, you have to consult with us. We want to hear from you. We should hear from you. So I'll let the listener decide whether that's a demand or an ask.
All right. Here's Ali Meters Knight at the government meeting, making tribal sovereignty a thing, as it well should be, here on People Power Radio.
Well, hey, Tanani, good morning. Welcome to Occupied Machupta Territory. My name is Ali Meters Knight. I just want to let you know that we are all here. We know that you're here trying to get the tree removal going underway, and so are we. We met with you December 13th, all right? Since then, we've written two letters, government to government, requesting consultation, not only with local tribes, but local agencies. We have gotten the letters. We have gotten Intertribal Stewardship Workforce Initiative, ISWI, has sent these two letters in conjunction with the local tribes with no response. Since then, we have 20 Native personnel for tree removal, certified, ready to go. We have 100 folks, Native and non-Native, certified through traditional ecological knowledge. And right now, this week, we have 50 people certified for S212 Sawyers to work. Now, we would like to hear from you. We want to hear from you. We should hear from you. Give us a call, please. Thank you if you do. We are not going to go away because we are from here. We live here. This is our territory. This is where we live. When you're working in our territory, you're negotiating and building contracts to touch all this. You must consult with us. You have to consult with us. This is us. I expect to hear from you after this. And that's all I gotta say. I hope to hear from you. I hope you give ISWI a call. Intertribal Stewardship Workforce Initiative.
Do you have a number?
Yes,
we
have our number.
You already
have
the numbers in the letters that we have sent you and copied most of your team.
Is that included FEMA? Yes.
It included FEMA in D.C., Chicago, and here. Thanks for listening. We could be your best partners and make you look really good if you'd give us a shot.
Boom.
Boom. Now back to the closing of our interview with Camille Von Canal, a reporter with Report for America on assignment with the Chico Enterprise Record since June of 2019, covering underreported stories on the Ridge post-campfire.
I really like this Allie Metters Knight quote, too, in your article, where she put, "Noncompliance here is taking away from local communities' ability to restore and manage our communities' ecosystems," said Metters Knight on Wednesday. "Soon all the hotels and motels and Airbnbs are going to be full again with new workers, and then they all leave. But we're here and ready to work." So when you talk to Cal OES, I mean, were they even able to talk about any of the contractual agreements or how they were doing the contracts to hire so many local people? Or, you know, is there anything that's built into the contracting, the bidding process?
I'm not sure. You know, they, so what they've said is that it's in process, so they can't comment specifically about this one. But I mean, that is a good question. I guess I should look into it. The what Cal Recycle does is they contract with big contractors. So in the debris removal, they had four big contracts, basically. And then those are the big contractors that hire subcontractors. And that's where the local people can come in. But the big contracts, there's no, I don't think there's many local companies that can take on something that big at the cost that they're looking for. So they'd say that they're just in charge of the big contract. And then that big contractor makes its own rules regarding the subcontractors. But it may be different this round. I don't know. We'll have to see.
And I used to do contracts, procurement engineering, so I understand, as you know, if you've got contract negotiations, it's only so much you can say. But, you know, there really has been this demand or an ask, however you want to look at it, and the impact to the tribes, they're not hearing back. It's like, you know, to me, I kind of read it, Camille, is like, well, you'll know when we either give you the contract or we don't. Is it that simple, or is there more to it?
I mean, that's the way it would go for a private contractor. That's the way it would go for a private contractor. What the tribes are saying is that they should be considered as more than just a private contractor. And Cal ES hasn't quite responded to that yet.
Now, do you have any of the details on the whole sovereignty thing? Because I'm certainly not an expert, and neither do I think you are. But when I hear sovereignty, does that imply part of tribal land or the whole county itself? Because I don't think the footprint for tribal land is that big in Butte County, is it? Physical tribal land, right?
Yeah. Okay. There's traditional lands, which is different than like the tribal trust land. But the tribal sovereignty is that tribes are a political body, and they're nations. So they're considered nations, and their political power is not in the land, but in the people.
Right.
So that's why it's a nation. A nation doesn't have to have land to be a nation.
All right, Camille, it's been a wonderful having you in here. Is there anything you want to circle back on, or maybe something we haven't talked about that we could share with our listeners?
Well, you know, the one thing I did want to say is that I'm still learning. I'm sort of new to the area, and I'm really curious about everything. I love learning new things. So if anything I said was inaccurate, I apologize. And also, if you have like tips for stories you think I should do, or scoops, like really interesting people you want me to look into, or like things that are going wrong in the recovery process, give me a shout. You can reach me at my email, which is cvonkaenel@chicoer.com. And, you know, thanks to the community for letting me be here and share your stories.
Makes me want to ask before you leave, is there any highlight for you as a story that you've covered out of these hundreds and hundreds of stories?
There's one story that immediately comes to mind, other than just this ongoing sort of like forest management stuff, which is interesting to me. One of my stories went sort of viral. It went national. So it was like picked up by AP and the New York Times and Fox News. And it was about indirect deaths.
I read that.
Yeah. So...
I got chills, actually. Heavy. I'm like, I read that, and that was like, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, everyone in this community knows that the effects of the campfire are long-term, and you all know someone or know someone who knows someone who's passed away indirectly because of the campfire, but that isn't tallied officially. No one's keeping track of those those deaths. But I wanted to somehow recognize that. So I went through PG&E's wrongful death claims and found at least 50, there may be more, but I found at least 50 that were from the campfire but weren't on the official list of 85. So these are 50 people whose deaths have been kind of verified by medical experts and lawyers as being somehow linked to the campfire mm-hmm. because of an interruption in care, primarily because of an interruption in care. So that was rewarding because the families I interviewed for that were very grateful for the attention. And when the story started going national and getting all this attention, and I was doing all these interviews, like, the most rewarding thing was just Tammy Strong being grateful that I had listened to her story and shared it and paid attention. So yeah, that was, I think, I'm still sort of processing what that meant.
Yeah, it means a lot to me. Like I said, I did get chills because that was another common vernacular, you know, back like the immediate months after the fire committee of like, someone should be covering the fact that a lot of people are dying after that physical fire itself. And people would be talking, crying and stuff, talking about people that had committed suicide or interruptions to care. And I know our readers are going to be really happy to hear about that article because that's just who we are as a community, right? I'm just wonderful you were able to cover that.
Yeah, and it is 16 months after, or I can't keep track, many months after, yeah. More than a year after the fire, but these stories are still relevant, and they're still coming out now because there's public records and things that just take a long time to process. Yeah. And this was one of those cases. So, yeah, I'm still here paying attention.
Still here paying attention. Thank you, Camille Von Cannell. And thanks to all the reporters. I think anyone that's followed my work over the years here in Chico knows I'm a staunch advocate for reporters of all ilk. And I have a particular fondness for folks that are up covering underreported issues on the ridge and marginalized communities. And shout out to the Chico News and Review, because I think it fits really well into that interview with Camille, who is working a lot with people that are on the edge. But check out the front page by Asia Shiraga. It's a wonderful, biting interview. Very, very sobering. Living on the edge post-campfire. Anyway, thanks all. Thanks again, Camille. And next up is the start of our Managing Community Season 2 coverage, Community Ag. Nice little segue from traditional ecological knowledge to growing food. We got Pam Larry with the Butte County Local Food Network detailing the exciting details of this month's Victory Garden 2.0 installations here in Chico. Our extended interview with Pam will be up on the online archive and will be broadcast on the April 2nd edition of Imagining Community here on KZFR 90.1 FM. And Gam Womash says, welcome to People Power Radio.
So what we're trying to do with this Victory Gardens 2.0 celebration is to create a strong community that grows food together. So we're not going to just go out and install a garden in your yard and then walk away. What we're doing is we are wanting to make sure that people succeed at gardening. So we have mentoring sessions that are also part of it. There are three that are part of the package, but we're also connecting people with different groups around town and also with ourselves, folks in our organization, that will commit to helping you succeed long term. And by that, we not only mean being able to grow the food, but we also have a vision of people, you know, helping people save their seed. It's really important to save seed locally because every year the seed adapts to the area, and the strongest one makes us more resilient for the future. And then what to do with that food. So, you know, if you have too much of it, we're going to have workshops and classes on how to can, how to drive, how to preserve in other ways, so that you are able to really utilize everything that you grow. I'm really excited about that possibility. I would love to see us all coming together. Like, one of my visions is to have like a whole neighborhood that grows, you know, that has their whole yards together. And then at the end of the season or during the season, everybody gets together and cans the food together, just like they used to do in the mm-hmm. olden days. I just love that idea.
Well, a lot of the gardens are going in on one specific street in Chico. Laburnum. Did I get that?
Laburnum.
Kind of? Laburnum. Thank
right,
you.
Sure.
Laburnum. Will that be kind of multiple properties and maybe kind of do what you just said?
Well, we're hoping so. We don't know. We have one that we're working on that's going to be a demonstration of what's possible. There is another group over in the avenues called Avenue Farms. Morgan Kennedy is building that up as another opportunity for people to see what's possible. So do keep in touch with us as that develops. After the Victory Garden thing, we're going to really start focusing on that. We've been working on it, getting it ready to rock and roll, and we'll probably do a blitz day there for the Permaculture Food Forest and Neighborhood Composting Center. So keep your eyes open for that one. But in the meantime, this right now, we are in the volunteer gathering phase for the Victory Garden Blix, which is going to happen March 14th through the 22nd. We still have volunteer slots open. You can contact me at 530-570-6872. That's 530-570-6872. Our website is bclocalfood.org. You can sign up by yourself, or if you have a crew of 3 to 4 people, we can accommodate your schedule and go out and put some together. We have some teams that are coming for a day, and we don't know how long that will take because we're going to be gathering the data, but we're figuring it'll be under 5 hours to do 2 gardens. But we also have shorter shifts for people that just want to commit to 1 garden.
How many gardens are you putting in this first blitz?
50. Yeah.
50 gardens?
50 gardens. And then we've already got signups for the fall for about 14 up on the ridge and maybe the whole burn scar. We're trying to figure that out. And I don't know, as I said to someone who had called today about doing something, if we get really strong community support and have some help, maybe we can even do more than 50 in the fall. So yeah, really exciting. The community has been responding. And yeah, I'm just so excited about this project.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to go out there like 5 days in a row.
Yay.
In the garden. I'm going to interview some of the folks that are installing the gardens and people that the property owners and the actual people volunteering. So stay tuned for that here on Imagining Community. Thanks again, Pam Larry, for being on.
Thank you for having me, kind sir.
All right. That was Pam Larry with the Butte County Local Food Network. And they're located at bclocalfood.org. Next up, poetry by Ren Tuatha, followed by musical performances with Jimmy Broek and Diana Suzuki. And then we'll be back here in the studio. Thank you for listening to People Powered Radio. I'm really pleased. You know, I've been doing this new endeavor called Imagining Community. I'm really pleased that Ren Tuatha, a local poet, is going to be part of our storytelling team. And this is her first foray into Imagining Community. Welcome to Imagining Community, Ren Tuatha.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, and I thought Ren's presence and voice would be beautiful from her Cali Fragile poetry site, in that we're transitioning March through May to look at community agriculture. So she's going to give you a little insight on Cali Fragile and read some of the beautiful poems that are out there as we start talking about community agriculture and the farm.
Yeah, Cali Fragile is an online literary journal of climate change and social justice. We try to be an international and very diverse community, so we get poetry submissions from all over the world and also from our local region here. Cali Fragile is at califragile.org, and there are several years' worth of poems to enjoy there. We're actually dormant right now because we're going to be transitioning to become a print anthology, so we're very excited about that. So I brought some short-form poems that have been published in Cali Fragile. The first is a three little haiku from a poet in India named Kala Ramesh. Now, haiku you might be used to from elementary school, being a form that has 3 lines, 5 syllables, 7 syllables, and then 5 syllables. But modern haiku poets are stretching haiku any way that they want to, just like free verse. And so these diverge from that. 3 poems by Kala Ramesh. Trying to merge with twilight's oneness, but those monkeys go nonstop inside my chattering mind. On a forest trail, as leaves change color, I admire the walking meditation of insects. Forest bathing, I tune in to the trees. Just very beautiful, very simple, and short.
That last one seemed like a haiku. The other one sounded like a haiku.
But still, it was different than that 575 pattern. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is a frequent contributor to Califragile, Martin Willits Jr. A flamingo always has one leg up, ready to fly if it needs to. The weight of life is trembling down the night, shaking curtains made out of rocks. A blink will undo this world, fumbling with the way it used to be. Overhead, near perfect rain breaks the heat. It's quiet without you. Rain is writing this down. I love this little tiny poem, The Beautiful Suffering by Margarita Serafimova. Shining are the hundreds of thousands of fish in a sea prison, shining as one, deep suns. Sometimes it just takes a few words to say the whole thing.
Yeah.
The Swallows Have Left by Pablo Cusco. The orchards are bare. The sun no longer shines. Waters flood the mainland. Avocados shrivel from a lingering drought. There's a sign on the door that reads, "The bees are gone for the season. We'll pray for rain, but wait for the sun." The swallows have left Capistrano.
Maybe one more. Those are beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, this is a short form called Charita, a Malay form. And these are three from Peter Jastrzemski. This is a form that has a one-line stanza, followed by a two-line stanza, followed by a three-line stanza. And they're often grouped in twos or threes. And so this is three on a theme, Three Summer Charita by Peter Jastrzemski. Racing outside the children's food left on the table with a lecture about hunger in faraway places. Lifting a brick, the pocket of hidden coolness, a brief respite for the hand this summer day. Garden vegetables, the children picked, into the pressure cooker, letting go the wish for a dinner like the neighbors. I think that's a good transition into talking about agriculture.
It sure is. It's a great, great lead-in for Jimmy and Diana.
The Animal Mash here for KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I'm really pleased to be transitioning here our Imagining Community segment into Grub Community-Supported Agriculture. And I'm going to be playing a pre-record from last Saturday's Studio 416 that led into a conversation with Fran Stupenagel with Grub, and this is none other than Jimmy Brobeck with accompaniment by Diane Suzuki here on People Power Radio.
Fran, I know that that there's challenges to growing vegetables. There's great joy and great challenges. This song's called The Gopher Blues. Working in the garden, playing in the garden, listen to the neighborhood birds. Pulling out some plants I don't need anymore, and button up my long sleeve shirt. You gotta watch out for the burning sun. And mosquitoes in the evening. Digging in the garden, mulching in the garden, filling up a produce box. Shouting at the gopher in the garlic bed, whistle to the sharp shin hawk. It never gets lonely, no. Animals love living in the garden with me. Sharp shin, diving on the gopher snake, getting a good meal too. Got praying mantises and hummingbirds and old animals I love to. weeding out the garden, adding to the compost pile. Cut some curly kale and some summer squash. In the kitchen, I'm greeted with smiles. It doesn't get better, no. Oh, living in the garden with you, little, little, loving in the garden, love, living and loving in the garden, love, loving in the garden. Plant a summer garden, nursery that garden, and I'm setting out the vegetable starts. Land down drip tape, you know the water can't wait. Don't let them get dry. I love working with the water. You know this. I pledge allegiance to the watershed, our watershed, although I pledge allegiance to the watershed. Can't do it without water. Gotta defend our water. Cherry trees are blooming, peach trees are blooming. Soon we'll be eating some of those sweet cherries. Mmm. Did you ever read a cherry? Make your lips turn red. Climb high in the tree. Try to fill up a bag. Did you ever read a cherry? Make your lips turn red. Don't reach too far, you might break that branch. Did you ever read a peach? Juice dribbled down your chin. Gonna walk to the water. Gotta jump in. Jump in the water, wash a dribble off your chin. It's a real hot day, gotta get in. An apple make you smile, crunchy, sweet, juicy, twinkle in your eye. Did you ever read an apple put a twinkle in your eye? Did you ever read an apple to make you smile?
You just heard the introduction for that we played on the leap year edition of Studio 416, and that introduced Grub CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, and Fran Stupnagel. And she's actually in the house. But before we turn it over to Fran to close out the show with a nice little conversation around community ag, we're going to do a little underwriting. Imagine community made possible. Generous contributions, keys of our supporters. And by Chico Natural Foods Co-op, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries, and supplements. The co-op has hot food, a salad bar, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. Chico Natural Foods Co-op on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m., open 7 days a week. And by the Feather River Recreation and Park District, announcing the annual Wildflower and Nature Festival, Saturday, April 4th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at River Bend Park in Orville. And this festival highlights the local beauty and nature of Butte County. More information, including vendor, at frrpd.com and at 530-533-2011. And get your mic on there, Fran.
Oh, hello. Good evening, Guillermo. Thanks for having me tonight.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful to have you, Fran. And Wasn't that a cool intro that we did for Studio 416? You had such a beautiful look on your face that day.
When Jimmy yeah. Brobeck. Oh yeah, that was a good day.
It was a good day.
Yeah, that was a nice photo.
Yeah. So I'm really excited about, you know, doing this season two of Imagining Community, Community Agriculture. So maybe just a quick introduction for who you are and who you represent and where your farm is.
Yeah, so my name is Francine Stupnagel. I have been farming with my husband at Grub CSA Farm. That's our farm. We started it's been like since 2008. And it's gone through a big wild journey of transitions and segues and growth and all this stuff. And GRUB stands for Growing Resourcefully Uniting Bellies. We started the farm in the hopes of a solution-oriented view on the world, because the world is crazy and I needed something to do with my life that I felt like I was creating something and not taking away from something. You know, like I didn't want to go and like, you know, I don't want to diss on anyone else's work. I just wanted to create something, and I saw there as being this like void in the world that like everybody is like either moving, like transporting food around, like from big ag, you know, like so much of our food, like what do they say, every calorie we eat takes like 14 calories of energy to like transport it, you know, it's coming from like all over, not in California as much, but like in other places, you know. And then I saw there's being a need as for like healthy food for people, because people don't know how to cook winter squash, people like don't know how to eat vegetables, and they people have diabetes and like they're all sick and like they're like all devoid of like nutrition and stuff. And I saw that as a problem in our world, and environmentally, and for also sustainability and also for health. And that's why for me agriculture felt like a really good thing to do. And so community ag, I mean, we're so lucky in Chico. There's a lot of different great farms at the farmers market. We do a thing called a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture, where people come and pick up a box of vegetables once a week from our farm. And we're just starting our season right now, pretty soon. And it's a great way for people to come and try new vegetables and directly pick up from their farm. From a farm in Chico, they're getting like, you know, 10 things in their box every week, and they're getting to try new things. And they're also like, it's really cool for me to like know these people for like my whole, you know, 10 years. Today I took my son to the doctor, which is one of our CSA customers. And we've known her. Since he was a baby, you know. So it's like it is a really big part of the community. And then the market, too. I mean, as a vendor there, I'm not always there in the wintertime, but as a vendor there, and Eric too, people get to see it. And that's community ag, the market for all the vendors and all the producers, you know. And you know, I heard your show earlier in the night, and just talking about what Pam Larry is talking about, just getting people eating from the land they live on is so important, because, you know, when it hits the fan, if all of our food has to come in on Highway 5, that doesn't really going to support our town. Now, I think that if people really got it together, we could probably produce most. Wouldn't it be amazing if we could produce most of the food that this town eats within the city limits, like Cuba back in the day when, like, you know, they lost their petroleum, and then Fidel Castro had to like make it the law that to grow food all around, you know. Not to say that we're going to do that here, but we could. I mean, potatoes could really fund us. Anyway, I could talk on and on about different things.
Yeah, we could be like Victory Garden 2.0 is like 1.0, and 42% of the community is eating local. Right? Local organically grown food. I would love that.
I mean, right? You know, I mean, what was it? Pam Larry, actually, she's awesome lady. She was telling me about a place in Vermont where, like, in Vermont, the state had, like, made some, Pam could tell you this better, but the state made some law that said, or just a recommendation that said, we recommend that our state starts eating locally, and we're going to, like, help support, the state's going to help support, like, local farms get off the ground and stuff, and then increase their local food eating that in 1 year by, like, 40% or something, like, way more than they actually were, you know, intending to. And I think that, you know, we have the third best soil in the world in Chico. And so we could produce after Yangtze Valley and Nile Delta. I learned that at Chico Museum, by the way. It's pretty awesome. you know, we could, like, between the meat producers in this town, like small-scale meat producers and you know, there's great rice here and there's great vegetables and there's great fruits, although that's changing because of climate. You know, what Pam's talking about too is like with small scale agriculture, it's more adaptable as well. When you have 400 acres of walnuts or almonds of the same crop, like if there's a kind of a shift in some kind of weird thing or a hailstorm that's really horrible when the trees are blooming because of weirdness, well, you lose your whole crop of almonds and everyone's devastated financially, you know. But when you got like a whole, you know, bunch of different things, like we grow, I think we grow about like 45 different varieties of vegetables, and within those varieties of vegetables and some fruits, we grow about 250 different like varieties. So like lettuce, we grow lettuce, but then we'll grow like about 21 different varieties of lettuce throughout the year. So anyhow, my son Milo is here, and he is 6, and he lives on the farm with us, of course. He's almost 7, and he wants
to. Almost 7. He told me that in the hallway. He said, uh-huh. I'm almost 7, Mom.
He wants to see.
And I said, I'm almost 60. Nice to see you. You want to say something on the mic? You should. It's always nice to hear a young voice on the radio.
In 2 weeks, I'm 7.
In 2 weeks, he's 7. He was born in 2013, yeah. Which feels like a snap minute ago.
Yeah, you said you wanted to create something new. You had 2 kids and a farm and some new property.
I know.
That's,
and
that's
we
a creation. You're a creator.
Yeah, one of my best friends, she said to me, she's like, you know, Franny, when you do something, you always do it really big. I don't know what's going on with you. But so we just bought, like, I'm, you know, speaking to National Geographic, speaking of local food and sustainability, you know, National Geographic did this great article a couple months ago about like food sustainability around the world. And one of the things they're saying, of course, Americans need to eat less meat and less dairy and more vegetables. But it said the thing that we need to eat more as to be a more sustainable society and globally is more nuts, because nuts are super high in protein. And that's something I'm really interested in, considering we just bought 15 acres of walnuts, which we're taking out a bunch of them. But if you see on West Sacramento on the corner dairy and West Sac, there's always walnuts we've been taking down this month. It's pretty fun. But we are leaving some. And I think that walnuts, honestly, as far as a protein source, could be wonderful. They're not just for cookies. Like, I feel like they could be a really great protein source if it does hit the fan. And beef prices go crazy, and soybeans are being grown in Brazil so we can have more beef and this and that, you know. Anyhow.
Pam Larry talked about how food, it's been proven that the more fresh it is, the more, the better it is for you, you know, the more nutrients. And I say to me, and nothing better nut than cracking a walnut.
Totally. All those oils and everything. No, and that is true. Like, when you get food from, like, the farmer's market or CSA or fresh food, it's going to be more nutritious because it hasn't been, like, shipped up Highway 5 or shipped across the country. And it's also going to be, you know, especially if it's grown without chemicals, which we're not certified organic, but we do grow everything organic. We're working on getting certified. It's a lot of work, okay, and right. We have so much going on already. But when it's not sprayed in chemicals, it has to fight for the right to live. And so then that food that you eat is going to be stronger in nutrients, and then it will help you fight your right to live your body, and you're going to be more healthy and feel better in general. And it's proven. Anyway, it's not just hearsay here.
You know, one thing I want to say, you know, the fight for life, and, you know, talking about, you know, changing your lifestyle, you know, just a big shout out to Jenny Lowry, with founder of From the Ground Up, because her backstory is really compelling of how sick she was, you know, working too hard and not eating right. And, you know, she's been working in the soil here in Butte County for 7 years or so. And I just really appreciate what they're doing over there at Kenfield Farms and beyond, which makes me actually think that, do a quick plug, we're going to have our first season 2 community Imagining Community event at Kenfield Farms, chilling in the gardens, coming back 4 to 6 p.m. Come on out. We'll have some folks from the local community, ag community, and I'll be there too. Be a lot of community there on Sunday 4 to 6. So really quickly, we got a couple more minutes left here for him. Maybe a minute on where Grubb's located and how we can learn more in the closing comment, all that.
We are located, we're on West Sacramento Avenue. And we are on the corner of Dairy and West Sac. You'll see it's like the only non-walnuts. We just did buy walnuts, though, but it looks very different. And how can you get more information? Well, you can go on our website, grubcsafarm.com. And Milo wants to tell you something. He's telling me. Go ahead, Milo, say.
We actually live on Dairy Road.
Yeah, we just moved to Dairy Road. So we're on the corner of Dairy and West Sac, but our farm's on 3169 or 3197 West Sacramento Avenue. Our website is Grubb csafarm.com, or just check us out at the market. We're at Saturday Market, and we're going to start Thursday again pretty quick, and Wednesday too. And closing comment, you are amazing for listening to KZFR and having this awesome community. And oh yeah, and we have CSA on every week. If you're interested in that, there's more information on our website. My son wanted to, honey. Yes. Anyhow, so closing comment, this land that we live on in Chico is amazing, and we got this. It's totally amazing what we have to offer. Go to your farmer's market. I'm sure you do. Every KZFR listener is probably at farmer's market all the time. And diversity is amazing in all ways, not just culture, but in food as well. And that's my love, is food. And I've been seeding different brassicas and lettuces all day. And I look at vegetables all day long, and plants, and love your earth, because your earth loves you. And don't eat poison, because it's not, doesn't make sense. Thanks, Guillermo, for having me.
Yeah, don't eat poison. And I just had a quote, Dan. He's like, seems like you grow based on the land's need, not the consumer's need.
Well, I mean, we do.
A little bit of both, huh?
Of course, we grow what the consumer wants. Like okra, like I could grow okra all day, but like no one wants to eat okra. And we do cover crop, which is what the lands need. I mean, you know, okay. I mean, if I grew what the lands needed, I would be growing oak trees and you know, wild yarrow or something. But like we're growing what the community people need to eat, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I feel bad for like pulling a weed or like killing a gopher or something. But like, you know, we're growing food for the people. Like food for the people, you know, for all the people of this town. Like we don't sell anywhere else but in Chico. And we might start selling to Raley's, which is awesome, because then we could get to the people that are not, you know, going to the market, like just to the regular folk that like don't really go to the market, you know. So nice. That's great. It's awesome. The more food we can grow for the more people of Chico, the better. Thanks, Chico.
Speaking of awesome, Beetle Nation in the house coming up right now. Thanks again for everyone. And thanks for listening to People Power Radio.